The governor just signed a bill into law this week strengthening and improving resources in Connecticut for children's behavioral health. This is House Bill 8004, which passed during the special session. And we wanted to have Commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Public Health on to talk about it, Dr. Manisha Jutani. But before we do that, Dr. Jutani, and welcome to the show, I wanted to first talk about major news that broke in the overnight hours. State public health officials confirmed the first death from the flu of the season here in Connecticut. So welcome, and could you talk a little bit about this first?
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, Melissa. So, you know, we know that October is the month where we really push for vaccinations for flu and COVID and RSV for those who are eligible, because we know that the fall and winter is the beginning of this respiratory viral disease season. And unfortunately, we were able to confirm yesterday that in the end of October, there was a person in their 80s who passed from the flu. The reality of these shots that we give every season is that they may not prevent you from getting the disease, but they definitely reduces the chance that you may go to the hospital or that you may die or that you may transmit this virus to loved ones in your family that may be more vulnerable. And so, you know, yes, do we see the greatest number of deaths from flu and COVID every year in our oldest age groups and our youngest age groups, so kids under the age of two? That is what we see every year. But everybody can play a part to be able to try to protect ourselves and those that we love around us.
Dr. Jutani, can you explain really quickly, because I think sometimes the question always becomes, well, you know, why do I need to vaccinate, you know, especially like my kid? I think that's always a question from parents sometimes, you know, if I feel like your kids are all vaccinated, there's always the question of, well, why do I need to do it? And, you know, is it just a matter of being exposed to somebody else if you don't have the vaccine? I think there's always sort of that misconception maybe a little bit about, you know, what is really the importance of having your kid vaccinated for flu?
You know, it's a very good question you ask, because I think that a lot of people struggle with this. Look, we know that vaccinations are a way to expose the body to parts of a virus, as an example, so that you develop immunity. The choices are get exposed to the real virus, take your chances with infection, and see how you do, which, you know what, look, it's true. A lot of children are going to be okay, but I will tell you, we see a lot of kids in the hospital every year as well, and unfortunately, around the country, it is a lower number, but we do have children that experience even worse consequences, especially last year from the flu. And so what's the reason for getting the vaccine? There's several fold. Number one, you have a greater chance of not missing school, not missing out on games, not missing out on birthday parties. Your child has a greater chance of either not getting the infection or having a very mild version of the infection where you may not even realize that you have the flu in the first place. The second thing is that, look, we're heading into all our big holidays where we're going to be getting together with our older and younger people in our families. And we can potentially reduce the chance that older relatives, grandparents, aunts and uncles can get the virus because you have a reduced risk of having it yourself. And the third is, look, there are children under the age of 6 months old who aren't even eligible for any of these shots. If you have a household of multiple children and you have a newborn in the household, the chance that that child, that newborn, if they get the flu or COVID, ending up in the hospital is a lot higher. They've never seen any of these viruses through a respiratory viral disease season before. They're a newborn. The chance of them getting more sick from it is also higher. So, you know, this is a fundamental challenge we all face, especially in American society. We're a very individualistic society. We have individual rights. But there are things that we can do to protect ourselves, our families, each other, as a community. Because by getting vaccinated, you are really reducing the communal burden of these diseases. And I'm not going to deny that there are people who get the shot and say, well, I felt bad from the shot. You know what? That happens to me, too, sometimes. And I don't deny that that's the case. But I will tell you that the chances that you're going to have a worse form of the illness, should you actually get sick, are much, much higher without the shots. right now we are seeing low rates of flu. Unfortunately, we always see them precipitate in our older folks, usually the first. And so the fact that we had somebody in their 80s pass in many ways is not surprising, even though we have low rates of flu in the state. So this is a great time to still get vaccinated before Thanksgiving. Same is true for COVID. I know that people have a lot more hesitation around COVID for a variety of reasons since the pandemic. But we actually have more COVID around right now, and we've had 4 deaths from COVID this season so far. So, look, this is the time when we can really make that final push before heading into Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the holidays that'll come up through December. So I would encourage people to think about it again and see if you can get it on your schedule.
We are chatting with Dr. Manisha Jutani, who is the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Public Health. And this week, the governor signed a bill into law after the special session happened earlier this month. And it specifically strengthens and improves resources across our states for Connecticut's children and their behavioral health. It's House Bill 8004, and it tackles a lot. It looks at a lot of different things, helping families, for example, find and connect to community-based crisis services instead of going right to the ER, for example, and many other things. I do know that DPH did have a bit of a hand, involvement, if you will, in part of this behavioral health bill, specifically the school-based health centers. So, Dr. Jutani, I wanted to talk a little bit about that and make sure people understood the significance of this.
Sure. So, you know, a number of our schools throughout our state have what is called a school-based health center. It may be a clinic that provides mental health services, dental services, physical health services. Kids can go in for checkups. Maybe they have asthma. Maybe they get medications. They can get caught up on their vaccinations. And there are 91 of these school-based health centers that DPH actually funds throughout our state. But the reality is that there are somewhere around 300 of these school-based centers around the state that are funded through other mechanisms, and the funding doesn't come through DPH. So because of that, we don't have eyes on the actual data out of those particular facilities. I can tell you that for the 91 that we fund, we have over 32,000 children that come through those doors. We've had over 139,000 visits over the course of a year. But our state has really been struggling with trying to tackle the challenge of mental health challenges among our children, definitely since the pandemic, and it certainly is something that continues to remain a challenge. So one of the things that this bill is going to let us do is do a study to see if we can really define what a school-based health center is, and see if we can figure out a way that even if some of these school-based health centers get funding through other mechanisms, potentially DPH could be the place where data comes so that when people ask us how many children are we able to capture and see in our schools, we would have those answers. The reality is our children go to school every single day, and we have families, parents, that may have one job, two jobs, taking off time to make it to the pediatrician's office and make it to get all those health-related things that they need done to be able to stay healthy is challenging. And if we can have mechanisms in place in schools where children can have access to those types of resources right in schools, and I can report out to people in the legislature when they ask, what impact are these school-based health centers having on our kids? I can come back with some real data. That is something that I think could help everybody in this state. And so that is why we were grateful for this particular bill, so that we can continue our work in that avenue.
So give me an idea. And again, we have Dr. Manisha Jutani here, who's the commissioner for DPH. So right now, DPH currently funds 91 of these school-based health centers, correct? Is that what you said?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Okay. So when you say that we need to do a study kind of defining what a school-based health center looks like, what are you finding in the 90 plus that you see now? Like, are they very different? Are you feeling the needs are totally different? And I don't know exactly the locations of these, but do you find, depending on the area, so for example, sometimes we'll hear about if you live in a rural part of the state and it takes 30 to 45 minutes to get to just the nearest hospital. Are you finding that I think it's great that we're doing a study on kind of what should this look like, but I would imagine school-based health centers are going to look totally different maybe in Fairfield County compared to a different county in the northern part of the state. I don't know.
So it's a good question. You know, I think that the ones that we fund through DPH, we know what they look like. We have some that have, you know, physical health services only. We have some that have behavioral health and physical health services. We have some that have dental health services. So we know what the ones that we fund look like. What we don't know is that when we look at the 300 throughout the state, to your point, there may be areas where they just have a behavioral health counselor. And they may be calling it a school-based health center, but maybe they don't call it that, and so they don't even end up in the number of 300 that we're talking about. There may be other places where they say, you know what, we're going to do vaccinations only. That's the only service that we have the capacity to provide. Well, then, again, doing this study to be able to say, all right, if this is what we are calling a school-based health center, let's have a standard definition. And we have an association in the state of Connecticut that does help make those determinations and does have definitions in place. But really bringing that association and others to the table to be able to say, okay, let's have a standard definition. Let's look at which data we should be capturing from all the different types of clinics that we are going to say actually qualify as a school-based health center, so that we can then figure out what needs to be built out. Because to your point, I will get requests from at times that we need a school-based health center, let's say, in this area of the state or that area of the state. But maybe they already have certain facilities, and what we really need is to build out mental health services and not necessarily just the physical or behavioral health or, you know, the dental health services. So I think that's part of what we're hoping to accomplish through this bill, so that in the end, greater services can be provided to meet the needs in the community.
Totally. And certainly I love the focus obviously on mental health, because I think that's clearly something that was highlighted certainly during the pandemic, but we knew it kind of existed before certainly. The other question I have for you, and this is obviously going down the rabbit hole, so thanks for following me. Staffing. I mean, so is that a concern? You know, if you find out from this study that, yes, we need to have 3 to 5 mental health specialists, you know, running, let's just say, a school-based health center, and I'm way overestimating, I have no idea, but where do we find that? Because we already have struggles with just getting paraprofessionals and people who I think in some way tap into a little bit of the mental health needs that kids have, or even just the behavioral health needs that kids have in schools today. So how do you bolster that? How do we make sure that we have the bodies to be able to now run what would be these school-based health centers?
So I think the first step, what we're looking at, is even a step before what you're asking about, right? Is the step we're looking at is how many do we actually have? What services are we actually providing? The next step would be to say, okay, there's actually a gap, and that, you know, because I think that's the question that comes up a lot. Where do we have gaps? Where should we be filling gaps? You mentioned at the top of this about the urgent crisis centers and being able to, when a child is in crisis, maybe going to a facility that is not an emergency room where you can get care in an emergency and for behavioral health purposes. And we have 4 around our state. These have done very well, but more and more people need to know about them so that we can actually get care to the people who need them. What we're looking at is first figuring out where exactly are all of these and how many visits are we getting, how many providers do we have through them. If we figure out from there that we can really capture what we're looking at, you know, the state has been making efforts since the pandemic to be able to expand the behavioral health providers in our state. And we've done that through a number of different mechanisms, whether it is entering into certain compacts which is, you know, you have a license in one state and you can get licensed in Connecticut as well, so that we have a broader group of people who can actually work in the state of Connecticut, whether it be as a physician, as a psychologist, as a nurse. And these compacts have made a big difference. We've done reciprocity, where people can get a Connecticut license quickly because they've been licensed in another state. We've improved telehealth provisions. So your question is a complex one. There's going to need to be a multifactorial approach, and we've been doing that for some time. So certain things have improved, but I think by getting our first glimpse at how many school-based health centers we have, what exactly they're providing beyond the ones that DPH actually funds, that'll give us a good, you know, sort of view of the entire system in Connecticut to figure out what we need to continue to fix.
Well, definitely keep me posted on this. I think it's really fascinating, and I love the fact that we're going to be doing a study on this. And so any information that comes of it, please let us know here on WICC. And Dr. Giuttani, I want to thank you for the work that you do, Commissioner of the Department of Public Health here in Connecticut. And thanks for giving us the time. I know you're very busy, so I appreciate it.